having Shelley Moore Capito at the top of the ticket running an incredibly strong race, of course, helped us with infrastructure, with messaging, and then having her as the standard bearer for the Republican Party statewide was incredibly effective for us on many levels, particularly because Congresswoman Capito, Senator-elect Capito, was so popular and certainly gave the Republican brand a strong face and name that folks were very comfortable with. But we know that West Virginia is a conservative state, and it gets down to Republicans have been chipping away for a long time at the Democrat majority. A lot of this goes back to 2000, whenever President Bush carried the state and Congresswoman Capito was first elected. And since then, we've seen growth in virtually every election cycle on some level, and we punched through finally. Like most other states in, say, the Deep South, whenever you punch through all at once. It was you do the major sweeps. You take both chambers at the same time. It's what happened in Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and we've simply followed that wave.
So you think we're following a trend that other southern states have followed?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's we're only going to get further red, provided that we have the successes in the legislature that I believe we will, and West Virginians will begin to further identify with the Republican Party, not just as being conservatives themselves, but with the Republican Party itself.
Minority Leader, you were on our very first Viewpoint back in September, and we talked about the possibility and also the push for your party to take over the House. So were you surprised that the GOP came away with as much of a majority as it did? You all have 64 seats now.
Well, we're certainly very excited about that, and I don't think it was really a surprise that we would take the majority, because all the things that Conrad talked about that I think were in play, and certainly with Shelley Moore Capito at the top of the ticket, we thought that was a real asset to our candidates. But also, if you just talk with the candidates that we had throughout the state, you knew the caliber of those candidates, how hard they were working, how much of a part of their communities they were. And so I don't think we were surprised we took over. I don't think that anyone necessarily predicted the magnitude of it. So, but I think that just shows the real sea change, as Conrad said, that we're seeing in West Virginia.
Conrad, I think it's been about a year ago since we talked about your all's push in the House, and part of what we talked about was just the party's ability to get people on the ballot, to get Republicans on the ballot, because you had a hard time filling those spots before. Do you think you were successful in that area?
Absolutely, and that was step one. It was you can't win if you don't have candidates, and then you have to have candidates who are willing to work hard, to put in the time for door knocking and fundraising and everything it takes. But then we also needed candidates who were willing to serve and be effective leaders, because we knew all along that the House and the Senate were in play, and it was important for us to find folks who were going to be able to not only win the election, but then be good representatives of the people. And that's what I believe we found.
So I think everyone right now is predicting at this point that you, Minority Leader, will become the next Speaker of the House. Is that how you feel?
Well, I think I have the support. I don't ever want to take that for granted, because that's a decision to be made by the membership of the House. But I certainly feel like I have the support of our caucus to take that role. And we're already rolling our sleeves up. We're already getting to work. We have a lot of work to do between now and January. And so we're concentrating on that. But I would certainly be honored to have that position, because I just think the ability to do good things for the people of West Virginia, to turn our economy around, to improve our education system, to just make the quality of life better for West Virginians is there unlike it's ever been. And so it would be an honor for me to be able to lead this tremendous group of delegates to make those changes, to make the bold changes we've needed to make for many, many years.
So the transition is already starting for you all. Where are you at that point right now? Have people already started calling you saying, I'd like to be on this committee, or I'd like
absolutely.
To lead this one?
I mean,
have you spoken to Speaker Miley about transitioning staffers? Where are you all in that
yes.
change of power right
well,
now?
Well, first of all, members are expressing what interest they have in terms of committees and chairmanships, and we're working through all that. We have had a meeting with Speaker Miley, and he's been very cooperative in terms of the transition, and I appreciate that. Because I think that's important, you know, not only for him and for me and for our caucuses, but for the people of West Virginia. I think they expect a smooth transition and a cooperative transition. And And certainly I met with the speaker for several hours yesterday, and we're moving along in that process. There's a lot to do. It's never happened in anyone's memory that we've had a change of party, and we've never had a Republican majority in our current Capitol building, which a lot of people don't realize. So there aren't too many people you can go back and say, how did you do this last time? there isn't that institutional knowledge, but I do believe we will have everything in place in plenty of time to be able to really hit the ground running in January, and we're looking forward to that day.
Can we talk about just kind of the timeline of events? It will be January before you all actually vote on a speaker, right? And then committee assignments don't come out until after that. Is that correct?
Well, what normally happens in December, Chairman Lucas and the Democrat chair will call caucuses of each party, and we will actually select our leader of each party who will be the candidates for speaker. So if I'm fortunate enough to be the person who is chosen in December by our caucus, which again I hope to be and feel that I will be, then we can at least go ahead and start a lot of that process. But as you said, nothing will be official. No actual chairmanships will be in place until that takes place in January. But our intention is to have all that in place. And it's just a matter of once the actual election takes place, then each of those people will already be ready. They'll already have their staffs in place and will be ready to go.
Yeah, Conrad, so let's talk about what your all's role is in this transition, because you're not just leading one in the House, you're also leading one in the Senate. The minority leader says that you all will call a caucus in December, but I'm assuming that you all have to do more than that. There's more of a role for the state party.
Well, Delegate Arpstead said, there's no one to ask how this happened before. So our role is large in the sense that we're willing to do whatever the caucuses need at this point, of being the leadership from the Senate and the House. We do what's asked, and that's everything from thinking about the agenda going forward to considering our infrastructure and what that looks like for a Republican controlled legislature, being the political arm of the party. Now that we can have a lot of successes in the legislature with our platform and our agenda, our political role takes on a different capacity, and it's going to be exciting to watch that evolve this session. One thing the state party, West Virginia state party, is involved with right now, which is very exciting, is a large portion of our staff is headed to Louisiana to help with the runoff down there, helping us to send another Republican senator in beating Mary Landrieu. Of course, their runoff is in December, so a lot of our ground game that we put together here is being transferred to southwestern Louisiana starting this weekend, and they'll all be back in December after that. And I know they're anxious to integrate themselves. Our staff's anxious to integrate themselves into the legislative process, and then it's time for us to think about 2016 as far away as that may seem, but in our lives, that's the next major step.
I don't mean to be critical, because I think it's probably a great opportunity for your staff to work with other people in different parts of the country. But at the same time, this is a critical time for you all to be switching over at the congressional level, switching seats, at the state level, switching control of both houses. Is that the best idea, to send those staffers out of state?
Well, for these folks who are career operatives, this is this is what they do, and they're part of an RNC effort. So we are very excited to help Louisiana Party and the National Party in our role as part of being the permanent ground game that is the vision of the Republican Party nationwide. One aspect of the Republican Party's Growth and Opportunity Project that Chairman Priebus authored and passed and was adopted by the committee a couple of years ago was that Republicans had to acknowledge we're bad at the ground game. And nationally, part of growth is understanding where your strengths and weaknesses are. And Democrats have always beaten us in the ground game. And so that part of that is a multi-state effort. Improving that is a multi-state effort of when there are resources, including human resources, to send them where needed. We had a lot of folks from Virginia and Ohio come and help us in our legislative efforts this year. So we're now supporting the folks in Louisiana as part of the infrastructure building there.
So I want to take a second to remind our listeners that you're listening to Viewpoint on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm joined this morning by Republican Chairman Conrad Lucas and Minority Leader of the House, Tim Armstead. Minority Leader, I want to ask, you know, every January, both the majority and the minority parties put forth their list of top priorities for the upcoming session. So now that you all are no longer that minority party, does that list of priorities change for you all?
Well, a large part of that list is going to be, you know, similar to what we've pursued in the past, because so many of those initiatives have been blocked in the past. And we believe that the people of West Virginia want to see progress in a number of those areas that we fought for so many years. So, you know, I think it's the real key to what we want to accomplish is putting people back to work in West Virginia, improving our education system. So many of the issues that we face are a factor of poverty, and that goes back to our job climate, our economic climate. And there are so many things we can do in those areas. So I think you'll see a lot of the things that we've pushed for be a part of our agenda. There'll be some new ideas. But we really believe that moving our economy forward is a factor of basically four different areas: our education system, our tax structure, our infrastructure, and our legal and regulatory climate. And we have bold initiatives in each of those areas to put people back to work in West Virginia. We think it can be done. We want to center in on our energy sector, which is such a great strength in West Virginia that hasn't really been tapped into the way it can be. We have a tremendous opportunity, unlike any other area in the country in that sector. So we have a lot of new ideas coming from the people who are elected this year that I think will be rolled out as we move forward. But we will continue to fight for the same things that we fought for many years.
Is there any interest in your delegation right now to revisit some of the initiatives that passed under the Democratic majority, the Justice Reinvestment Act or Senate Bill 373 with above ground, the inspection for above ground storage tanks? I mean, there's talk that these are going to go away now because the Republicans are in the majority.
Well, first of all, in terms of the water, the act that we passed in terms of the water, we do not intend to undo that. If there's any idea that we're somehow going to delay that or undo it, certainly in any piece of legislation like that, if you have a large piece of complicated legislation, there's nothing wrong with going back and looking at what impact it's had. And if the scope was too broad or the scope was too narrow or things need to be tweaked, we should do that. That's just part of the process, and we've done that for many years. So we will take a look at those areas and see if there are areas that need to be corrected. But as far as just totally changing that water bill, I don't think there's any desire to go back in and undo that. There were some areas where the way the definitions were drawn may have taken in tanks and different facilities that really are nowhere near a water source and don't actually contain any toxic chemicals. So those things like that we might look at and see what the scope was. But as far as trying to roll it back or delay it, we have no intention of doing that.
Chairman, the real surprise on election night was the Senate and the number of seats that the party was able to pick up, followed by, I don't know, 24 hours later, by a party switch that now gives you all the majority. I got a release from the Republican Legislative Campaign Committee congratulating Senator Bill Cole on winning the majority. Senate President Jeff Kessler yesterday congratulated him on his, quote, presidency in waiting, as he called it. Is it safe to say the Senate leadership has already been decided?
I'll defer that to the Senate leadership itself. There's been obviously a lot of speculation, and we always knew, the party knew, and the Senate members themselves always knew that this was a possibility. Like I said, we anticipated the potential for a massive wave where we punched through both chambers of the legislature and did the federal sweep, and you have to be prepared. So there were a lot of discussions held very early, and so a lot of the announcements and rollouts of everything from an agenda to leadership were things that have been thought about for a while. But I'll defer the answer to that one to the Senate leadership when it is announced.
How much does the choosing of Senate and House leadership matter as you all head into 2016, and I assume try to pick up a win in the governor's office?
It matters a great deal, as we will see, voters and onlookers are going to be judging the Republican Party based off of this session, very much so, and we realize that. So the Republican brand, so to speak, from the political aspect of it, not only the legislative accomplishments we're hoping for, but the brand itself, which is so valuable in the political arena, is going to be measured in large part based on this session here in West Virginia, which will be driven by the leadership in both the House and the Senate. So obviously we are very excited for the leadership positions that I believe will be in place, and very confident in the individuals who will be occupying those roles. So the leadership is, it's also the very first decision that the caucus officially makes. You heard a lot on the national scale of it, of the political spin being, if you elect a Democrat to the U.S. Senate, the first vote will be for Harry Reid. And if our goal was to fire Harry Reid, you can't vote for a Democrat. So the very first decision that senators and House members will be is for Speaker and Senate President this year. So they'll be judged from day one on the decision they make.
I'm going to push you. Bill Cole for governor in 2016?
You know, I'm thinking Conrad Lucas, but nobody's asked me yet. How's
So, gentlemen, I want to pose the same question to both of you as we wrap up today. And we'll start with you, Minority Leader. What message do you have for the Democratic legislators, both in your chamber and across in the Senate?
Well, I think the people of West Virginia, when they elect their leadership, they speak as to who they want in those roles. And we should respect their decisions in that sense. And so one of the things that we've been concerned about over the years is that Republicans were sort of cast aside. If they had a great idea, often it wasn't taken into account simply because they were Republicans. And we don't want the legislative process to work that way. We want to hear the input of all 100 members of the legislature. That's important. That's how it should work. Debate and discussion and back and forth is important. So what I would say to them is we want them to be a part of the process. We want to hear what they have to say. We're not going to agree on a lot of it, obviously. But at the same time, that's part of the process. And so, you know, and the other thing I would say is that, you know, hopefully they will join with us on a lot of these things that we know need to be done for the state of West Virginia. Some of those have been blocked for several years, but now there's an opportunity to really move forward. And I hope we can do that together. I really do. I think that's what we owe to the people of West Virginia, is to put these bold initiatives in place together as a unified body.
Conrad, do you have a message for the Democratic legislators that'll be at the Capitol this year?
I think that Delegate Armstead summed it up, that the philosophy is that this is about West Virginia. It is about working together. Even though we have a large majority in the House, the goal here is to always find solutions that are for the best of the people. It's what we were always looking for in this is obviously an opportunity to pursue and advance the agenda that Republicans have been trying to for a long time. But most importantly, West Virginia is a two-party system. And we believe what the best competition that exists is the competition of ideas. And now we have that. So I think that even Democrats will see the great value in debate and discussion, which is exactly why we have the democracy that we do. So the message is simply, we look forward to having honest and vigorous debate on issues, but ultimately West Virginia is the priority here.
Well, let's hope we can stay positive moving forward. Chairman of the State Republican Party, Conrad Lucas, Minority Leader Tim Armstead, who may be Speaker of the House come January. Thank you both for being here this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
The biggest upset on the congressional level Tuesday evening came in the state's 3rd district, where longtime Representative Nick Rahal was defeated by State Senator Evan Jenkins. The Democrat turned Republican won 55% of the vote total compared to Rahal's 45%. Congressman-elect Evan Jenkins joins us on the phone this morning to discuss his win. Congressman, congratulations, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
So, were you expecting as much of a win Tuesday evening as you were able to pull off?
You know, each campaign does a lot of polling throughout the campaign, and it's done on a pretty frequent basis. And over the course of the year, we could see kind of the trends and the movements within the attitudes and feelings of the public. We had several polls in the final weeks that showed us up by high single digits in that 8-9. But, you know, the most important poll, of course, is on Election Day, and there were some pretty significant polling disasters. Eric Cantor's loss in Virginia in the Republican primary had polling that suggested he was going to win easily, but he got defeated. So we were cautiously optimistic. We felt good about where we were, but you just still kind of pause and hold your breath to see what the actual numbers come in as. So we were feeling encouraged and optimistic, and it turned out well, and we're very humbled by the results.
Strong campaign helped push voters in your district toward the Republican side of the ticket and helped you win that race?
This race, both at the national and state level, was a lot about the direction of our country, the direction of our state, the priorities and issues of importance. Congresswoman, now Senator-elect Shelley Moore Capito, was an awesome leader. She has certainly served the 2nd Congressional District with honor, with integrity, always polling well ahead of her challenger, but had the right message. And there is no question that she had coattails. But when you look all the way up and down the ballot and look at the kinds of folks that were recruited or who stepped up to the plate to run at the state level, there were great Republican candidates for the House of Delegates and state Senate. So while a lot of people talk about the failed policies of Obama and the war on coal, those are critically important that motivated people for a change of direction, not a change of pace. But we had a great leader in Congresswoman Capito at the top of the ticket, and we had awesome candidates up and down the ballot. So there was a rising tide for all. We were in this together, a lot of teamwork, and it turned out well for us as a group.
Where do you all stand in your transition to office so far? Have you resigned from the state's medical association, from your position there? Have you talked to people in Ray Hall's office about transitioning staff into Washington? Where does that stand right now?
My day job is that I'm the director of the State Medical Association, and of course my term as in the state Senate was coming to a natural end with an election of a new state senator representing the 5th Senatorial District. The State Medical Association, working with our president and the executive committee, they will be out looking for a new director. I will finish up there at State Medical at the end of this calendar year. The swearing-in for Congress is on January 3rd, and there is a new member orientation that begins next week, and it's about the program that you learn all the ins and outs of a smooth transition. So we're hitting the ground running. We are reaching out to any and all to be in very inclusive as we transition from into a new role.
So a year of campaigning, and now the work begins.
You know, we've been, we asked for the voters to give us this opportunity. They have blessed us with it. We're not going to squander it away. We are humbled by their support, and we are going to work tooth and nail to try to get West Virginia moving again, get our hardworking workers back on the job, get this war on coal stopped, and get our country moving again.
Congressman, I want to ask you just really quickly about the turn of events this week in the state Senate. I don't think anyone was really predicting that chamber would flip, and I'm just interested in what your reaction is.
Well, again, up and down the ballot, terrific candidates. Senator Bill Cole, who is a terrific friend of mine, a great leader. He was the chair of my congressional campaign. He, along with other members of the state Senate, worked very hard throughout this campaign. So while maybe it was not mainstream to think that the Senate would flip as well, there's certainly lots of sense of opportunity in the House of Delegates under their leadership there. But when you look at the candidates one by one that were on the ballot, the Republican nominees, you could not help to say, you know what, there really is a way to get to that 17, 18 plus mark. And sure enough, it happened. So this is a unique moment in time to see both the House and the Senate flip. But it's great candidates, it's good campaigns, and it's a message that resonated with the public. So this was very doable.
So, Congressman-elect, I think that's all the time we have today, but I appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And best of luck to you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Viewpoint on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Ashton Mara.
Support for Viewpoint is provided by AARP, providing real possibilities to its nearly 300,000 members in West Virginia. On Facebook at AARP West Virginia or online at aarp.org/WV.
The votes were tallied Tuesday. Reporters across the state, including this one, scrambled to figure out what happens next. The Republican Party was able to gain enough seats in the state Senate to tie the body 17-17. The scramble, however, didn't last long, thanks to one senator who announced late Wednesday evening he'd leave his party and give the GOP the majority. Joining us now by phone to discuss his decision, Senator Daniel Hall of Wyoming County. Senator, thank you for taking the time today.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Senator, were you approached by the Republican Party to switch, or was this a decision that you made on your own?
Well, I was approached. I had been approached for, as Senator Bill Cole had stated yesterday on another show, that they'd been courting me for some time to switch, and that was never really something that was serious on my mind because the numbers were so far apart. But yeah, I did. Once the vote totals came in Tuesday night, I started receiving phone calls from across the state.
So why make this decision? Is this a if you can't beat them, join them kind of situation?
Well, I mean, some people are going to look at it that way. I'm sure there's, and I know there's been criticism out there from the, Democrat Party folks, and I don't blame them. That's their job is to support the Democrat Party, but my job is to represent the people of my district. And this decision was solely based on putting my district in the best position to move forward. And to be able to do that in the best way possible in the state Senate, you need to be in a majority party.
So I think I saw yesterday, Senator, a statement, and I can't even remember where, but something that you said, you've got to be part of the leadership in order to keep your district relevant. Does that mean that you've been promised a leadership position? Does that mean somebody said, if you come over to the Republican side, we'll give you such and such committee?
There have been, being frank, there have been discussions about where I would land in the new leadership team. No commitments have been made. That's an ongoing discussion. The ballots haven't even been canvassed yet across the state. So, to make any promises or any commitments on committee chairmanships or position in the Senate or what committee I would be on, that's all premature at the moment. But discussions have been made. Yes,
but
have been taking place.
What committee do you think you're best suited for?
Well, I mean, you look at Southern West Virginia, the area that I represent. We have numerous problems and issues to deal with. One of the things that Senator Mike Green and I worked on for the last couple years and that I will continue to take up that fight with our new Senator-elect, Jeff Mullins, we're going to we've got to get the Veterans Nursing Home funded that was voted on last year to be put in Beckley. That's got to be done. So Finance Committee is obviously a good place to work on financial issues. Judiciary Committee is. I've been on that the last few years. That committee controls and deals with all of the issues that come up through the legal system, and a variety, almost everything in the state comes through the Judiciary Committee at some point. So we've got issues down our way. We've got road problems. We've got infrastructure issues. There's lots of places that I could land to in the Senate to benefit my district. And all those things are being discussed at the moment.
Do you worry about your credibility at all among your constituents if you choose to run for re-election?
I worry about it with a certain group of constituents, and that would be the hardline Democrat Party loyalist. But I do believe and have gotten overwhelming positive response by the district as a whole. The people of my district don't care about party politics. They care about their people. They care about their families and their district moving forward and their communities improving. That's what they care about. And they don't care whether who's in charge, Democrat, Republican, as long as their lives are getting better. And I believe that's where my credibility lies. No matter what I do, if I would have stayed as a Democrat, it would have been hardline Republicans against me. So no matter what you do, you're going to have opposition out there and a criticism. My job is to represent my people the best way I can, and I think this decision does that.
So are you saying then that if you had stayed on the Republican side of the aisle, that you wouldn't have been able to work with Republican Party members as a Democrat, or that the Republican Party wouldn't have been willing to work with you?
No, I'm not saying that at all, because I've got friends on both sides of the aisle and have since I've been in legislature. But anybody who understands the process is going to acknowledge the fact that the majority party has far more influence and control of the agenda. Ask any Republican who's been in the legislature over the last 80 years, would they have rather have been in control and been in control of the agenda and been in the majority party? They're going to tell you yes. So.
Okay. Senator Daniel Hall, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
In just about 48 hours, Senate President Jeff Kessler went from leading a chamber to trying to decipher how to share that position to a loss of the seat of power altogether. Hall's decision Wednesday evening was one he calls disappointing, but one the president says he wasn't exactly expecting. I spoke briefly with Senate President yesterday afternoon.
Hall, I had heard rumblings or rumors that there would be an attempt to try to get some people to switch. You know, that's always an option. I had been fairly, everyone I had called, and I tried to reach out to everybody. I was assured by everyone that they were holding tight and had no intentions of going anywhere. The only person that I didn't get a call or wasn't able to connect with was Senator Hall. I'd heard from other senators who had talked to him that they had either met with him and or talked to him the day before, the evening before, and was without any indication that was going to occur. In fact, I'm sure it wasn't. So I felt that was not likely to happen, but obviously it did. So it is what it is.
Senator, there are now reports from other media outlets saying that the Republican Party is still reaching out and trying to convince other senators to follow suit. Have you heard the same thing?
I've read the reports. I'm fairly confident that's not the case. Everyone I've talked to has indicated they had no indication of switching parties, and I'm confident that won't occur.
Senator Hall's switch obviously has some big implications for you now. There were all kinds of possibilities of alternating days, of having co-presidents, of just working together to try to figure out how to move forward. I guess I'm just looking for how you feel at this point. It must be disappointing.
Well, a lot of people have spoken, that's why you have elections. I was honored and privileged to serve in that capacity. I knew going into the position and went into the Senate, as I've mentioned, that my backside was never welded to any seat or to any gavel. And it's always subject to political change, and that's what occurred in this instance. Again, I'm disappointed the way it happened. Then probably even more importantly, disappointed more in Senator Hall switching, but he has his own reason and rationale, obviously, for that. But life goes on, and frankly, when I spoke to my children yesterday and said, guys, don't worry, your daddy's not going to be president anymore, they said, you're not going to be in Charleston. I said, I'll be there, but not as much. And they cheered and hugged me. They said, Daddy, we're so glad. So, in some respects, you spend the most the last 17 years taking care of everybody else's kids, and sometimes you don't have enough time with your own. So I look forward to spending more time with my kids. I will work with the new majority party. I will be a member of the loyal opposition, and I will join with my colleagues across the aisle on any type of initiatives that improve the state of West Virginia. That's the most important thing to me.
Senator, do you have any intention at this point in running for the minority leader seat, or have you considered that yet?
I haven't given that any thought, truthfully. It's not something at this point I'm actively pursuing. I'll do whatever the caucus thinks is in the best interest of the party and stand ready to serve in any capacity to improve the operation of the Senate. But, again, that's not something I'm actively pursuing.
Okay. Senate President Jeff Kessler, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, from the Senate to the House, Speaker Tim Miley is facing a similar fate. In January, he'll step down after one term leading the House of Delegates and hand control to the state's first Republican speaker in more than 80 years. I caught up with Miley Wednesday, and he shared his reaction to the midterm results.
Well, obviously, I'm disappointed that I will no longer be a part of the majority party in the House of Delegates and part of that leadership team to prepare an agenda and move the state forward. But the voters have spoken, and I think the results of the election reflect a level of anger that not many of us had seen in a long time. It appears as if people were angry with the Democratic Party, and whether that's the National Democratic Party or the state Democratic Party, it apparently doesn't matter. The voters were angry. They don't feel like their needs are getting addressed or their voices are being heard, apparently. So they made their voices known at the ballot box.
Is that what happened? Do you think it was a level of dissatisfaction with the national level politics that trickled all the way down to the state races?
I think there can't help but be a lot of that. And I think that is reflected in a lot of the campaign advertising that was done during this election. Every piece of direct mail that I saw had some reference to President Obama and President Obama's policies that we have little, if anything, to do with here at the state level. But nonetheless, the opponents were trying to associate all West Virginia Democrats with Barack Obama, President Obama, I should say, and they did a successful job of doing that. So it resonated with the people. The people did not want anything to do with President Obama's policies here in West Virginia. And if they thought that there was the slightest hint of an association with a West Virginia Democrat and President Obama, they weren't going to have much to do with that West Virginia Democrat.
So, Mr. Speaker, you only held the position at the head of the House of Delegates for one legislative session, but you've been on the leadership team for years as a chairman of the Judiciary Committee before that. So moving forward, what are the most important issues for the new leadership to focus on for West Virginia?
Well, in my opinion, the most pressing issues for anyone, whether they are in the majority party now or the minority party, is to focus on job creation and focusing on the creation of those jobs through small business growth and inspiring entrepreneurs. I still think we need to always be focusing on education and making sure that our kids are going to school and graduating from high school and leaving high school equipped with certain skill sets that will allow them to become employed in the workforce or equip them to go on to college after high school. And finally, I think we need to focus on making sure we all have access to health care in our state, especially for those who are part of the expanded Medicaid coverage.
The question moving forward for you all, I don't think is, can you work together? Because I don't think you have a choice. You have to work together. Both sides of the aisles have to come together to get things accomplished. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, I think you are correct. As I have said publicly before, most bills and pieces of legislation that pass the House of Delegates and the State Senate do so with overwhelming bipartisan support. Not all, but most. And so I don't expect anything different from what legislation passes the House of Delegates going forward. At least I hope not, because we all represent West Virginians, and if something passes the House that's controversial and is divided by partisan differences, then that's a reflection that not all people in the state support that piece of legislation, and we might need to reconsider that piece of legislation so that we get good, broad-based bipartisan support.
Okay. Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for your time today.
Ashton, thank you.
Miley says he's not yet decided if he will seek the position of minority leader. You're listening to Viewpoint on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Ashton Mara. With all of the historic changes from the midterm election, it can be hard to keep everything in context. Here to help us with that challenge is Rob Rupp. He's a professor of political science at West Virginia Wesleyan College. Rob, thanks for coming down today.
Hey, good morning. This was a historic year, and I want to thank you for having this program to provide insight and information.
Well, we appreciate all your help with it as well. You heard me ask Conrad this question earlier, but I'd like to pose the same to you. What made the Republican Party so successful in West Virginia this year? Were state and local races decided on national politics, or is this, like Conrad says, a larger trend for the state?
Well, I think what we've seen over the years is a slow and steady transition from Democratic dominance to Republican majority. And what happened with this election, Ashton, is suddenly that transition went on steroids because the Republicans not only captured the House for the first time in more than 80 years, but did so by a very large margin, 2-1, and in addition, captured, which surprised many, the state Senate. So this is an important transition. Now, as far as your question on what made the difference, there were a lot of factors. The Republicans had in place good recruitment, so they're good candidates. They had an excellent organization that probably surpassed the Democratic get out to the vote. But the overriding issue was also the unpopularity of the president. You know, Ashton, Lyndon Johnson said a landslide does not respect state boundaries. If it's going to be a landslide, it's going to sweep across the nation. And I think what this election showed is that this wave, this tidal wave, swept across the state and down to the office that was closest to the voter, and that's the district. And this is what happened. It was not just a wave, it was a tidal wave for the GOP.
Is that historically how it's happened in other states? It's a tidal wave really quickly, or are those transitions usually a little bit at a time, as we've seen over the past few years?
Well, in other states, particularly the southern states, it was done in one election, if not two. Hmm. Now, in West Virginia, in a sense, what you had here is a more slow transition. This is the first time, Ashton, since the 1800s, that the GOP has scored double-digit victories in successive elections. Now, go back to the history in 1930. The Democrats gained 37 seats in one election and took over the House and kept it for 80 years. As opposed to now, in which the Republicans had a gain of 11 the last time, 17 this time. So it's been a more steady, a slower transition.
So we've heard for months now from the Republican Party that they were focused on gaining those seats in the House. The real surprise for me, and I think you said it was for you too, was the ground that they were able to gain in the state Senate. Did anyone really expect that?
I have yet to see anyone, but I'm sure Senator Cole and other people had prepared it. But this was kind of an under the radar. Everyone was focusing, Ashton, on the House, where the Republicans were only within four seats of winning it. And as far as I see it, most people simply ignored the very important campaign in the state Senate.
So as they move forward into the next legislative session, I think if you listened to the way the GOP talked and they were able to pull the House, we would have had split sides. We would have had a Republican House, a Democratic Senate, and you assume that that means that both sides are going to have to be a little bit more moderate to get things through. Are we going to see an extreme shift to the conservative right now as bills come out this next session?
Well, this is very unusual because basically, Ashton, we've never had divided government. In almost the last 100 years, under two governors, Moore and Underwood, did you ever have the governor being occupied by one party and the legislature by another. So this is all new territory in terms of what is going to happen in terms of it. I would hope, as you had Tim on this program, that the GOP is not going to overreach, and more important of all, the GOP is going to be what a major party should do, and that is listen and work with the minority. I think what we'll see here in the legislature, Ashton, what I hope we'll see, is a working of a competitive party system seen in the legislature where there will not be Will there be cooperation, compromise, and a lot of stuff will be happening.
Ultimately, though, the Republicans don't need the Democrats now to pass any legislation. But at the end of the day, a Democratic governor has to sign that bill into law. And we've seen that he's not afraid to veto something that he doesn't believe in. We saw it in the abortion bill last year.
Yes, but Ashton, I think what's going to make this different, what I hold hope out for the government when Charleston working, is that first of all, by temperament, Tomlin seems to be able to deal with this new legislature, and also you have to realize, Tomlin has spent 20 years in the state Senate. In fact, he probably knows more about the legislative process than any governor we've had in our history. So for those two reasons, I'm hopeful that we're not going to see confrontation. Instead, we're going to see cooperation and we're going to see action.
Senator Hall made the switch and he gave the Republicans that majority in the Senate. But politically, for him personally, does he gain from that? He's up for re-election in 2 years, and you have constituents who are now saying, well, you changed on us. I voted for you as a Democrat. Does it hurt or help him?
Well, we'll find out, but let's look at other examples. What happened with Evan Jenkins when he switched? In the old days, partisanship, you know, two-thirds of the people voted only on basis of party. Now, at least a third of the voters in West Virginia won't align themselves with either party. So the days of what we call yellow dog Democrats and yellow dog Republicans are fading rapidly away. So I don't think, given history, that he is in that much trouble.
From the outside looking in, I mean, this, as soon as Senator Hall made this decision, it was on the Washington Post. It was on national media outlets. From the outside looking in, this seems like a huge deal. But at the end of the day, are West Virginia Republicans and West Virginia Democrats really that different?
Well, I think what has happened, that one of the reasons the Democrats could hang on to power in the legislature for 80 years, Ashton, is that they were a big tent party. There were a lot of conservative Democrats in that tent because the Republicans, to be honest, were not a viable minority party. And so when we look at it, and particularly when we look at the delegates, my students found that oftentimes the Democrat was just as conservative in these districts as the Republican. So I think this extreme partisanship is not true. I think West Virginians kind of play ball between what I would say between the 40-yard lines rather than going to the extreme.
So who will the Republicans tap for Senate president? Do they go with someone like Mike Hall, who's been in that leadership position? Or do they tap somebody like Bill Cole in the hopes of setting him up for a gubernatorial race in 2016?
Well, in this case, I would probably go with Hall. You've been someone who's been around a long time, and particularly as everyone seems to know here, Cole has gubernatorial ambition, so why occupy one position if you want a desire to jump across the street to the governor's mansion? But look what's happened. We're talking about what Republican wants to be leading a legislative body. Ashton, just quickly, if we want to sum up what's happened in the state, let's look at our new U.S. senator, okay? When Shelley Moore Capito was a delegate, she was outnumbered, her party was outnumbered 2-1. Now, after the 2014 elections, the Republicans in the House outnumber the Democrats 2-1. When Shelley came in to the congressional delegation, winning the House seat in 2000, she was the only Republican in the congressional delegation of senators and House representatives. Now, after 2014, Ashton, Manchin is the only Democrat in the congressional delegation. So we have seen this shift personified by our new U.S. senator, the shift of the state from Democratic dominance for 80 years to what is now apparent a two-party competitive system that is leading toward a Republican majority.
So with that trend, then, should we really be that surprised that Nick Rahal wasn't able to hold on to his seat?
No, Nick Rahal, he was like an icon. He was the old lion, 19 terms. And look who he served with, Rockefeller, Byrd, Mullahan. They're all gone. He was the last one of the old 20th century blue dog Democrats. And it's not just Rahal is a blue dog Democrat who lost in West Virginia, Ashton. There aren't any blue dog Democrats left in the House of Representatives. So in a sense, he stayed longer, but his defeat is not that surprising.
So who had the bigger hangover Wednesday morning, the Democrats after a loss or the GOP after a win?
Well, that's a good point. I think what we should say is that the voters, if we have now entered a stage of party competition, I think the voters of West Virginia have benefited, and watch these next two elections. They're going to be just as exciting, just as intense, and I'm afraid just as expensive and mean as this one was.
Okay. Rob Rupp from West Virginia Wesleyan, thank you very much.
Yes, take care.
Viewpoint is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia political news by following our show on Twitter at ViewpointWV or on our website, wvpublic.org. Our theme song was written by Matt Jackford. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks to everyone here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting who worked behind the scenes to make Viewpoint possible, and thank you. This is Viewpoint on West Virginia Public Radio.
Support for Viewpoint is provided by AARP, providing real possibilities to its nearly 300,000 members in West Virginia. On Facebook at AARP West Virginia or online at aarp.org/wv.